grateful for the honor to deliver the first keynote lecture of this European Congress, which is an eminent platform for contemporary international research on aging. A Congress that is also a tribute to the prominence and flourishing of aging studies in Ireland. Congresses such as this are vital opportunities to get updated on new research, but also to think once more about the basic concepts or assumptions of what we are doing. In this fashion, I will present a brief conceptual analysis of time, age and aging, and conclude with a short discussion of the theme of the conference, Unlocking the Demographic Dividend. I will begin and end with a short reference to Matisse's amazing late work. Matisse's amazing late work of paper cutouts, which is born from his sudden incapacity to use his hands and arms to paint. Out of this formidable existential crisis, a new form of creativity arose that was not appreciated by all, which is normal. What is remarkable from a gerontological point of view is that some commentators did not express that they disliked the cutouts or thought they were bad art, but that they were an expression of Matisse's senility, because after all, he was already approaching 80 when he began to show this work. This is a stark example of what we call ageism. I want to suggest, however, that the tendency to use age in a seemingly self-evident way represents a more pervasive problem for aging studies. Aging and time are interconnected because aging is basically living seen in a temporal perspective, especially living after having already lived for a relatively long time. This makes time an important concept in trying to explain aging. Time is usually connected to aging through the concept of age, that is meant as an indicator of aging. With calendars and clocks, we can measure precisely what the age of a person is in the sense of time since birth, although the meaning of such a fact differs depending on specific contexts and interpretations. Just imagine the differences between people who have lived the same number of years, let's say 55 years, in different historical circumstances, in different countries, wealthy or poor regions, in risky low-paid jobs, or in a generously paid and interesting academic position. However, age continues to carry implicit generalizing assessments with it, as if somebody's age could be an answer instead of initiating new questions. I'm not referring here to people who interpret their own ages in the context of their biographies. I'm speaking here of age-related generalizations that are used as explanations of aging processes. Human aging involves processes that may have causal implications in interaction with contexts. Such processes can be measured over time, and this may expand our knowledge, but chronometric time does not cause anything. It is nothing more than a measurement of dated durations, very important for many purposes, but underreflected in its relevance for aging. This unfortunate habit appears to be inspired by traditions in which time was seen as representing a universal order of phases, eras, stages of the universe, or mankind. Such a normative order, or ontological logos, led to the term chronological. To emphasize the need to explicate such implicit meanings of time and age, I use the term chronometric time. Chronometric time is a specific form of time that is grounded not in the dynamics of living nature, but in the movements of the solar system. Gravitational movements of these enormous bodies of dead weight. Insofar as these movements are not regular enough for precise measurements, they are corrected by the rhythms of other dead materials, extremely frequent and stable atomic oscillations. However, the life that evolves on at least one of these gravitational bodies can be dated and measured, but its developments do not follow chronometric time. Of course, these reservations neither deny the finitude of life, nor that aging takes place within the limits of the species. It is, however, unclear where these limits lie. They are empirical limits, that will be broken by anyone who lives longer than Madame Calmann. More important than the maximum lifespan are implicit generalizing assessments of age that tend to become a tool of societal exclusion. For instance, when workers who have become older than 50 or even 40 years are called older workers, or when people who have lived for over 80 years are not taken seriously. The predicates old and older contain more than just a comparative measurement. The question that arises after this critique of inadequate chronometric representations of aging is whether human aging might not follow regular changes of its own that could be seen as its basic natural clock. In that case, its formative rhythms over the human lifespan might be expressed in a time scale that would adequately assess aging processes. Usually, the second law of thermodynamics has been called upon to develop an anthropic measure of such an intrinsic age. However, open systems, such as human organisms, that rely on interaction and exchange with diverse contexts, do not fit well in the thermodynamic models of intrinsic dynamics that presuppose that the system in question is sealed off from the environment. The specific dynamic properties of human aging include an openness to the environments extending from personal lifestyles to ecological or social contexts. Emerging research from ecological developmental biology on the social organization of genetic expression or epigenesis demonstrates how complex these interactive processes are. These processes defy a general developmental logos and must be discovered in their specificity. And in the course of this discovery, chronometric time can only function as an instrument of measurement that should not be extended to represent human aging. Because of such intrinsic openness, developmental regularities may still be strong in embryological phases, but in childhood and adult life, these regularities begin to decline rapidly. Comparative research on aging identical twins indicates that genes account for approximately 30% of developmental outcomes in old age. The remaining part is a playing field of contexts and personal agency. However, comparisons between age groups are still very popular, although their value for the analysis of aging has been questioned for some time. In research on aging, these questions have been articulated as cohort and age confounds. Is a certain characteristic an age effect or a cohort effect? Moreover, with the acceleration of social and cultural change in late modern societies, it also becomes increasingly difficult to disentangle cohort and period effects. Several authors have tried to separate these different effects statistically and made claims to have solved the problem, but there are still good arguments for skepticism. According to experts such as Glenn, these attempts have been futile, leading, in his words, to much pseudo-rigorous research and almost certainly to many incorrect conclusions. End quote. A major problem is that these effects are not additive but interrelated. Age, period, and cohort effects interact with the dependent variables that researchers on aging are interested in. So, we have reason to doubt whether an aging is really the independent or even explanatory variable much research assumes it to be, which leads to the question whether and how age-related concepts might make sense. Of course, it's always possible to calculate average scores of relations between age on the one hand and norms, problems, or diseases on the other. The problem is that such averages and age distributions that can be helpful in themselves tend to preclude research on the specific factors and contexts that lead to diversities in aging. I will give two examples, one on a psychological and one on a societal level. The first example refers to the extensive search, psychological search, on the age that you are versus the age that you feel. it's not easy to understand how one can feel being, for instance, 45 years old, or younger or older than one's actual age. But the outcomes of this research appear to have strong predictive power. To have demonstrated such longitudinal effects is in itself, of course, valuable. Feeling younger than one's age, having positive perceptions and attitudes towards one's own aging have, again and again, proven to be reliable predictors of many important indicators. Such feelings are strongly connected with better cognitive and emotional well-being or health, with future disability, longevity, morbidity, and mortality. But it's a very peculiar form of reasoning that deserves more questioning. We could analyze it like this. I am 65 years old. Being 65 implies for others feeling not so good, stiff, tired, depressed, whatever. I feel, however, much better. People who are 45 feel like me. But I did not feel like that when I was 45. However, I am 65, but feel like being 45. Here, chronometric age is not being interpreted, but has become a proto-scientific instrument to interpret one's own age, aging. This raises many questions. What kinds of implicit lifetime clocks work here? Where do they come from? However, these research results are usually gathered without paying attention to context or to the expectations or experiences of the respondents. This metric discourse of aging demonstrates not only a cultural dominance of age, but also a poverty of ways to interpret aging. Researchers show surprisingly little interest in what lies behind the facts and feelings of age, probably because of the impressive predictive results. Psychologists such as Deal and Weil advocate, therefore, recently more research on awareness of aging. These are puzzling ways in which age is made important, especially for others who are supposed to be determined by their age, whereas the exceptional I can feel younger or maybe older. On the societal level, we can raise the question, how and why did this generalizing overemphasis on age come about in, for instance, European societies? Definitions of who is old and when old age would have arrived, have, according to historical studies, for instance by Pat Thain, long been more important on the appearance and physical capacities of individuals than on chronometric age. Age was made important as a result of the political will of the late 19th and early 20th century European nation states to reorganize the life course, especially to improve the productivity of their populations. The ensuing tripartite division of the life course in education, work and retirement took place by establishing legal age categories and also moral discourse surrounding the institutionalized life course had a strong preference for age as this was supposed to guarantee that everybody would be treated equally. Nowadays, the life course is producing very unequal trajectories, demonstrating the ineffectiveness and in a sense, injustice of treating different groups of older workers equally based on their ages, without paying much attention to the differences between them. And here we have our example on the societal level. Mandatory retirement is hardly a problem when most workers are exhausted, if they reach retirement at all. But it will be experienced as ageism by those who reach retirement age in good shape, while others can hardly continue working. During the last decades, we have seen a constant reorganization of the life course that is not geared to accommodate diversity, but is driven by intensifying global competition, a retrenching welfare state, recurrent systemic crises, and neoliberal politics of population aging. Together, these developments form a difficult context for reigniting solidarity over the life course. However, with an eye on the growth of the world population, there is hardly an alternative for population aging. So we have to unlock the demographic difficulty. There is some reason for concern here, as the desired flexibility of choice to accommodate the growing diversity of aging remains structurally dominated by a focus on productivity, accompanied by a late modern emphasis on individualization of life course risks. It is one thing to get rid of mandatory retirement or raising pension age to encourage people to work longer, but this will not be helpful if one remains unemployed while a pension is still years away and losing value. Both the productivist interpretations of active aging that are dominant at the level of EU policy and the successful aging program tend to redefine the life course and aging processes in terms of individual challenges. Rowe and Kahn even emphasize that aging would be largely under the control of the individual. This is a quote. However, as we can learn from many studies of the life course, diversity in aging also consists of persistent inequalities of ethnicity, class, gender, and age categorization. The cumulative consequences of such structural and cultural dynamics of inequality cannot be understood as resulting from individual choice or preference. Proverbs such as "time destroys all" suggest that all humans are equalized in and through time, but some are destroyed earlier than others. Including aging in society implies attention for diversity in the positive sense of acknowledging the many contributions that can be expected from all the citizens, but also attention for diversity in the negative sense of cumulative inequalities. Besides these two impressive challenges, we should not neglect that as long as life is finite, aging eventually implies decline. We need more attention for the ways in which decline is being defined, acknowledged, or denied by aging people themselves. It is time to eliminate age-related exclusion and to acknowledge non-productivist agency, but also to acknowledge the dignity of human vulnerability, the dignity of unsuccessful, unproductive, and inactive aging. Confronted with the bureaucratic rigidities of chronometric age and the recurring dichotomies of successful versus failure, productive versus unproductive, and active versus passive, we can find some inspiration in biological interpretations of time as a rhythm of opening and closing, activity and passivity, degeneration and regeneration. One way to envision aging as a continuation of life and not discarding it as something outside life or outside active life or is to see it as a dialectic of both vulnerability and complexity of biographical identity. On the one hand, as people live longer, their life histories become more complex, which has its reflection in a broad sense, on identity in a broad sense. On the other hand, the vulnerability of human life also increases. A vulnerability, we may add, that is not bound to any age, but is shared by all human beings. The inspiring example of Matisse shows that vulnerability and complexity interact to reignite creativity. That his vulnerability has even been of constitutive importance for the path-breaking creativity of his late work. Many examples of what has been handed over to us as wisdom also show this constitutive role of vulnerability in highlighting aspects of life and aging that remain hidden as long as we privilege so-called normal adulthood and categorize people according to their ages. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Jan. Our next